and welcome to Comic Cuts, the panel show. My name's Kev F. Sutherland. You might know me as a writer and artist for Beano, Marvel Comics, Oink, Doctor Who, the Scottish Falsetto, Sock Puppet Theatre, and my graphic novel adaptations of Shakespeare. But chances are you probably don't. My guests today, talking comics, are Noreen Skinner and Steve Noble.
Hello.
Hello.
Waving doesn't work.
No.
Comic Cuts. We're looking at a panel, and we comprise a panel. There's a few of us. So the panel sees a panel, then we talk about the comics from the panel we discuss, and we call it Comic Cuts.
Have you considered pre-recording it?
I have two guests with me today who brought with them a panel from a comic or something close. We're going to see if we can identify it and talk about it. Maybe we and you will learn something about comics we didn't already know. Or maybe we'll just show off a bit and have an enjoyable chat. Let us see. And I'll tell you what, the chances of showing off are very, very high today because one of my guests I went to school with and we have mutually been showing off for a very, very long time. He is Steve Noble. Hello, Steve.
Hi, Kev.
The only person I didn't have to write any notes on. And my other guest is Noreen. Noreen, where are you joining us from?
Hi, Wickham.
Hi, and my name's not Wickham, so where are you joining us from?
I am joining you from the from my spare room in Buckinghamshire, High Wickham. That's not a joke.
You're not the first guest from High Wickham. David Leach, who edits Titan magazines and who Steve and I have worked with for many, many years, is from High Wickham and told us that it was the home of the Hellfire Club. Were you aware of that?
No, I shall be moving out. I'm joking.
Disraeli held these, or no, he owned the house which had a grotto at the foot of the garden in which these salacious people did their, I think it was magic rituals and dirty sex.
Oh, in that case, I won't be moving. It sounds great.
Noreen, you were in a double act. And I remember the posters for your double act in Edinburgh. Tragically, I missed them. You were called Franks and Skinner. Now, what were the chances? I mean, did you go around waiting until you found an act whose name went with Skinner?
Yes. I spent my entire life, I held back my comedy career until I could find my Franks. I couldn't believe it. We didn't plan to even become a comedy duo. We met at a panto in Beauty and the Beast, playing those famous roles. Literally bread rolls, baguette and croissant.
I thought you were Beauty and Beast. I was going to ask who was who.
No, it's ridiculous. We literally were playing some bread rolls, but they were these ridiculous sort of clown characters, and we decided to form a duo. And then it was later on that I said, oh, what's your surname? We should probably come up with a name. She said, Frank. So I said, that's ridiculous. Let's take it. And we contacted Frank Skinner, and he said, go for it.
You actually contacted Frank Skinner? You didn't just go for it?
Yeah.
Because we had a comedy club back in Leicester when I lived there, and we called it The Monk House as a tribute to Bob Monkhouse, who was going through one of his not particularly fashionable phases at the time. So we thought it was sort of ironic, The Monk House Comedy Club. But asking Bob was very low on our things to do list.
Yes, we only realised it because we were actually using Frank Skinner, a picture of him on our flyers, claiming as a disclaimer that we weren't affiliated to him. And we realised that that probably might not be okay and we should contact him. And he was actually, it was all like really lovely and, yeah, worked in our favour, thank goodness. So, yeah, well, great.
Did you get any bookings you didn't expect to get? Yeah, you suddenly find yourself top of the bill at the Apollo or something.
We wish. We actually couldn't have done it any worse because if you search Franks and Skinner, we're like probably the 75th page on Google.
Oh, of course. When it comes to really bad names for acts, when I was in a band at school, the name we chose was Private Party. We thought it was really this suave and smooth lounge music. We were kind of Duran Duran, Dire Straits. No, if you put that sign outside a pub and you're in the upstairs room, nobody comes because you've just told them not to.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, you shoot yourself in the foot.
Now, you studied dance and musical theatre. That's just setting yourself up for embarrassment, isn't it?
Yes, that's probably why I don't really do as much of it anymore. I trained in dance, and then musical theatre, and then went into comedy. I think it was probably just to get myself out of the madness. But it's followed me around, and I now teach dance in schools in my spare time, and I just love it, really. But I can't take it seriously. That's my problem.
Steve, you did stand-up comedy for a while.
I did. I did it for 3.5 years on and off. And it's actually stood me in great stead in life, because I sell for a living, as you know, I'm a salesman. And it's interesting because a lot of people are worried about public speaking, and you get to pitch a lot as a salesman. But there is nothing so scary as having 300 students yell at you, "Baldy," in unison. You know, once you've been through that, frankly, any technical presentation is a piece of cake.
Which did you find more physically and mentally challenging, Noreen? Stand-up comedy for the first time or dance in front of a large group of people?
Definitely stand-up comedy. I was so because I'd never stepped foot in that area at all, and I'd just seen a sign up on the school hall saying, you know, "Do you think you're funny? Go along." And everyone said, "Oh yeah, you're funny, go along and do it." And I just stood there and I thought, "What have I done? What am I doing? I don't know what I'm doing." But then as soon as you do that, I don't know about you, but you just get the bug. And then I started to enjoy that a lot more than what I'd spent thousands and thousands of pounds training to do.
Well, yeah, Steve, you've experimented with a whole load of these areas, but largely gone back to what you'd have to call sensible jobs. How do you advise your kids?
I was quite lucky, really. Kids are quite creative. Jack is a great guitarist, you know. George got the gift of the gab. Macy did dance and singing as well. So yeah, but it was always do what you like, really. I mean, I had a great time. I was lucky enough to have a day job, but I could write comics on the side and do comedy on the side. The reason I stopped doing comedy was because I just started an ad agency with my business partner, Rob, at the time. And he said to me, "Thing is, Steve, if you have a good gig, you come in the next day and you're on top of the world. You know, you'll talk to anybody. If you have a bad gig, you're miserable." He said, "You aren't a salesman for this business." And he kind of had a point, you know. So that was it, really. And that, and also, because when I was doing it, gosh, back in the mid-90s, there's still cigarettes that everybody smoked. And I didn't. And my clothes were just rank all the time.
Yeah.
I kind of, between those two things, you know. And also not being very funny. That was the other one.
Oh, listener, tell Steve he's wrong about the not being funny. Well, we're going to see how funny Steve is, because we've got comic panels brought in by both of my guests. Listener at home, you can see these panels on the website, kevfcomicartist.com, and they should be on the holding artwork for this podcast episode, depending where you get your podcasts from. But don't worry, you don't need to see these, because you're going to have them described by the fellow guest. And I think we should begin by having a look at Noreen's selection. Okay, Steve, can you describe, without guessing yet where it's from, what are we looking at?
We're looking at a tight close-up of a very blonde lady, I'd say with quite 60s makeup, 60s hairdo, and she's thinking to herself, "One quick tip." Sorry, I'll get this right. Try that one again. "One quick twitch, and I'll have this mess cleaned up."
For the benefit of the panelologists at home who study line technique, inking, that kind of thing, we're looking at an entirely square box. It's been done in brush and pen, I would say. More brush than pen, but a bit of both, and it's in colour. It's in the sort of colour that you would see in an American comic book of the 50s, 60s or 70s. And this scan also shows us that the page has faded and yellowed in a way that's very familiar to those of us who have old comic books. And also, the voice bubble, "One quick twitch and I'll have this mess cleaned up," I think gives me the clue to what the comic might be. Steve, do you want to guess?
I'm guessing it's Bewitched. I didn't know there's a comic of Bewitched, but I'm guessing that.
And I'm guessing it's Bewitched, and we're looking at Samantha. Noreen, tell us more about this.
Yeah, I absolutely love Bewitched. I watched it when I was younger, and like yourself, I didn't actually, like Steve, I didn't know that there was a comic. And then I was looking recently and I thought, actually, this is amazing. What an amazing comic and so well illustrated. And I thought, actually, I really get from that what the show was, what the series was. And it was a real big part of my childhood because basically I just wanted to be Samantha and I thought I could be if I just twitched my nose. So I went through a real series, like a whole period of time where I just twitched my nose at my mum thinking that like...
and she thought she'd got a guinea pig for a daughter.
Yeah, I thought, oh, if I did that, then I'd have cleaned up the room, or I'd get my dinner would be served. You know, it never happened. But I just enjoyed that world so much. And I think it's maybe that's because of the dance aspect and the musical theatre, or like kind of just a bit more otherworldly. I was kind of living in La La Land probably most of my life.
Well, what I'm taking from this, and what's really interesting to me, so it doesn't really say Bewitched, and I don't mean that dismissively. That's a beautiful panel. That is something, that's a 1950s, 60s Mad Men model. You know, that is somebody, and it's not quite Samantha, funnily enough. It doesn't really resemble her, but it's a beautiful drawing.
Yeah, I got the nearest I got to comics like this was I got Partridge Family comics because I was a Partridge Family and David Cassidy fan when I was very young. Shut up, it's true. And they were comics.
So was.
They were published by either Dell or Gold Key, one of the less sexy, or maybe even Archie Comics, the less sexy publishers. And they will be the people who did Bewitched comic, I would have thought. Dell and Gold Key did a lot of spin-offs. They did the Star Trek comics for very many years. And quite a lot of the artists were working from very limited reference. So you couldn't get the comprehensive reference. You couldn't get videotape or freeze your screen in any way. So you'd be given a few photos. So it would be much better for an artist to come up with their version of the character, partly from memory and from the few references they had, than to try and get a photographic reference, because they'd never be able to do it from every angle and every picture.
Because the other thing with the Gold Key stuff, you'd have these lovely, beautiful painted covers, and you'd get on the inside, and it was usually a lot less good than that, let's put it that way. Noreen, were there many of these? I don't ever recall seeing the comic itself.
I don't think there were that many of them. I think there were like 14 issues or something of the comic from what I know of.
Wayne's World. What is their brilliant Bewitched fact?
I don't remember that at all. What is their brilliant Bewitched fact?
Noreen, do you remember the brilliant Bewitched fact that was brought up in Wayne's World?
I do not know.
Well, she had two husbands, Dick Sargent and Dick York.
Larry Hagman, oh. Yeah.
Dick Sargent and Dick York. Sergeant York.
Oh, no, that is better. Oh, dear.
Mind blown.
Larry Hagman was wow. I Dream of Jeannie. I'm getting my spooky wives mixed up.
Isn't Dick Sargent the name of the actor?
Dick Sargent is the name of the actor, yeah. Not Sergeant Dick.
So Dick Sargent didn't also be Larry Hagman. Wait. Give me a clean feed. I'm going to tell you that brilliant fact again.
What's that?
Samantha had two husbands. Her husband was played by two different actors. They were Dick Sargent and Dick York. Look at the surnames. Sergeant York.
No way.
Whoa.
You're not going to tell me you edit this afterwards, are you?
I'm going to have to edit it, aren't I? Whatever happened to the actress who played Samantha?
She did a couple of TV movies, one of which is quite a well-regarded horror TV movie.
In the last 60 years, doing a couple of TV movies, frankly, that looks like my TV CV.
Your TV CV?
Yeah, that sentence got away from me when I started it.
It is so fascinating, like you say, because I was thinking that just recently I've been watching quite a lot of series, as we all have, and the one that I've been watching was Schitt's Creek recently, and I was thinking those characters are so strong and so clear, like you just think believe that they are them, and I thought exactly that, like how they're pigeonholed then, aren't they, that they, it was hard to play any other character, and I do feel the same way. I mean, maybe that's just my ignorance because I haven't seen this actress in anything else. I just see her as the witch.
I tell you, the other thing that is missing, of course, nowadays, with any program like Schitt's Creek, were it made 40 or 50 years ago, there would be a comic spin-off. When did comic spin-offs stop?
I think you had comics about everything, didn't you? When every newsagent had a spinner of comics, and that spinner had to be full of something, you know. And, of course, they're aimed at across the population. We're great superhero fans, but there were soaps. There was True Romance comics. There was a TV property must have been Manna from Heaven, I would have thought. Yeah, it's already got recognition.
Adapted comics from TV shows. Steve, you and I worked on a few of those, didn't we? Red Dwarf, Zig Red and Dwarf. Zag, Zogazine. Did you do Hanna-Barbera comics?
No, I did Warner Brothers. I did Tiny Toons.
Count Dracula.
And Count Dracula, I did, yeah. These are my minor claims for fame. I had one creative period in my life that was less than 5 years all in all. And I'm still coasting on that now, frankly. Still signing the autographs, still getting people recognise me in the street. No, I don't really get that. Well, Kev, give you lots of credit, mate. You got me into both comedy and comics. We got into comics writing together as a result of writing fanzine strips. And you got me in as a gag writer and then rejected all my jokes. So we started doing lots of stuff together for the Wednesday column, famously for FA. It's funny to see all this stuff coming back on the net now. People like David Hathaway Price doing lovely scans of stuff that we'd kind of forgotten about that we did 30 years ago.
Yes, we were in the fanzine Fantasy Advertiser. Listener at home, you might like to Google for Fantasy Advertiser. And then 30 seconds later, you might realize you've just Googled the words fantasy and advertising. And you will regret that. But it was the name of a fanzine which Steve and I contributed to. We contributed to a thing called the Wednesday Column. These are all names that you wouldn't give things now because they're ungooglable. Wednesday Column, Frank Skinner.
Well, that got us the work from Brian Clark and the team to work initially on things like, because we did the Mad pilot, didn't we? We tried to do a Mad magazine. That was the first thing we got commissioned to do together, which Brian paid us money for. It never went anywhere, but it was great. And from that, that's where I got to work on Rainbow and Red Dwarf and Dracula, as you said.
And you're right. Right through the 90s, when we were working on these comics, the spin-off comic from TV shows and movies was still seen as a thing. They thought they could do it with cartoons like Count Dracula. I remember the Real Ghostbusters lasted quite a long time, considering that was just based on the cartoon spin-off from the movie. And so it lasted way longer than the show was on. Red Dwarf Smegazine was the most frustrating one because we started working on it on the gap between, was it series 5 and series 6?
Yes.
And the comic got cancelled just before series 6 came on.
Well, also because there was that long hiatus between series while certain criminal matters were resolved, which turned out not to be criminal, but it was a bit awful.
And so, Noreen, did you ever read comics based on any of these TV shows?
No, I've never, it was never a thing for me. But to be fair, though, I never was great at like reading things. I was always quite, I was in my head like creating stuff all the time, which probably says a lot about me. But also, it does make me laugh. You've just made me think about the fact that it was Lizzie Franks, the comedy partner, who said to me that she said, "What do you do in your spare time?" And I just said, "Oh, you know, I don't know." And I think even when I was little, I don't remember. I just remember always doing something that I never even. I was so fidgety, I didn't sit down. So the idea of actually looking at something. I sound like an awful, boring person.
Well, no, because that's exactly what kids do now. My niece, well, one of my two nieces is at theatre school. The other is likely to be going to theatre school. And what they can do, of course, is they are on Instagram, they are on TikTok, they are on YouTube. They're showing their physical stuff. They're doing the acting. Writing might not take up much of the time. I'm sure it does. I'm sure I'm doing a disservice, but they get it right out there. Now, certainly when Steve and I were young, the ability to do that, the closest was, I believe, Steve, you appeared in 8mm films made by a friend at school.
I did. I was in the far-famed oil rig, which made it as far as Michael Rodd and Screen Test.
younger listeners will really need to Google many of these.
No, seriously, don't do Michael Rodd. So we haven't really talked much about your panel because it is a beautifully composed panel. It's just a nice piece of art in its own right. I know I said didn't necessarily resemble Samantha, but it's look in her eyes is actually really wistful. This is a woman in love here who is looking out. What she's worried about is doing the housework.
Yeah.
I can show you the rest of that page, which is what Noreen originally sent me. So we see the whole page one of Bewitched, and we can tell you it's March 1967, published by Dell. We were right.
That's really nice. Look at the muscles on Darren. Bloody hell, he works out, doesn't he?
Look at the spelling of Darren, Darrin.
Yeah, but he's married to Samantha, so...
She also has like the most amazing cheekbones. Like, I think that was part of it. I just always wanted to be her, and I thought, well, I could maybe one day actually be her. And also my brother is an amazing artist, and I was looking at Kev's work as well, and just like, it's so incredible, like it's so intricate. And I think for me, when I was looking at comics, that was what stood out to me. It's something to do with the, I don't know, like you're saying about the eyes are looking wistful, it just looks bright and colorful and just shiny to me, even though it's not shiny at all, but you know what I mean.
Well, I'll tell you what, Kev, that also reminds me of the, do you remember that run of horror comics that DC did in the early 70s? Not the Crypt Keeper, what were they? They were the ones that were very...
House of Secrets.
That's right, House of Secrets. It's got very much that vibe to it, particularly with the Bewitched logo there. It does look like something that could have come out of one of those not horrific enough for code comics.
What stands out to me now and that I'm really admiring of now, which I wasn't as a child, is the draftsmanship or the draftspersonship. That is to say, the figure drawing is realistic and convincing, and yet it's not been done from photo reference. And so these artists, and they used to do a lot of the girls' romantic stories, they would have a really realistic look about them, a real solidity, big, solid brushwork. And that was, as far as superhero comics were concerned, really unsexy. What a reader like myself was enamored of was Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko, Steranko and Gil Kane, these over-exaggerated, over-muscled dynamic shots, which would all be with wide angle lenses and different shapes of frame and dynamic layouts. And that's before you even start on the ridiculous costumes they'd be wearing. And something like this, it was so tame and lame because it was so accurate, I suppose.
Mm. Yeah, but look at Darren's arms. I mean, seriously.
It's magic, but it's simple.
It's magic, but it's simple. Let's see if that applies to the second picture we're going to look at today. This is going to be the selection that's been brought by Steve. What? Was that link a little bit cheesy? Listener at home, if you want to see this picture in full, it's on the website and should be on the holding artwork for the podcast. But don't worry, you don't need to see it because, Noreen, you're about to describe it. What are we looking at?
Whoa, it's a busy one, isn't it? There's a lot going on in this picture. A lot of what looks like kind of... There's a gun. There's a man, very strong man in red holding a gun. There is a motorcycle at the top. There is a Dalek-type person, creature, thing in the middle, also holding guns. There's lots of guns, lots of weapons around in this. Very different to my picture. Actually, the more I look, the more guns I see. And
I hate guns.
I really don't like guns. No, and it says outside of the gun, out of the gun, it says pa 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 poo poo.
It's a poo gun.
It's a poo gun. And it's Saturday night, apparently. I see that. It's Saturday night. But typical Saturday night, I suppose, nowadays. We've all been stuck inside, so maybe that's a connection. Tonight's Rampage is brought to you by the Warlords. Oh, I didn't read that bit. And that at least that does confirm that I'm along the right lines. Weapons and guns. Warlords. The guns are blue. And they've got at the top, you've got the... Go Gang now going across in pink neon pink with a black background like a strip. Is that a horse? No,
I'm not seeing a horse myself. No. For the benefits of the panelologists at home, the people who study line drawing, colouring, any of the things that go together to make this, I can tell you it's drawn in line. It's done with a mixture of pen and brush. And also there's a texture producing some of the shading, which looks a bit like a charcoal effect that you would get from rubbing against a textured surface. And in some places, it looks like stippling. I actually recognize who this artist is, and they've used a number of techniques which come from design. There are figures overlapping each other. So the guy holding the gun in the foreground is superimposed over another picture below, as if he's in front of it. And then you realize, no, he's a totally separate picture. And above, the top half of the picture is actually a separate panel. But because of the way the things overlap, it looks like it could be the same panel. We've got three guys guys. They're actually on motorbikes riding towards us, Judge Dredd-ish motorbikes, but it's not a Judge Dredd strip. And then we've got the phrase, go gang now, go gang now, go gang now, going along the back. But it's almost like ticker tape going along the back rather than a more conventional comic book visual effect or sound effect. And the sound that Noreen described from the gun, pa 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 pa, ooh, is done in one long line. Again, a very distinct, very designery way of showing words in a comic strip. Now, I recognise who this artist is, and I think I can have a good guess at what the comic is. But Noreen, have a stab in the dark. Try and guess what this comic might be. What could it be called?
Really, I haven't got any clue, but let's guess a whole thing. I'll call it Warlord Go Gang Political Party.
Yeah, you know, that's probably a better title than the one I'm going to come up with, because I'm going to suggest that we're looking at the work of Howard Chaykin, who would have been the writer and the artist, both the penciler and the inker. And is this comic American Flag?
It is indeed American Flag. American Flag issue one.
Issue one. So that's right back in 1985 or six, I think, isn't it?
83.
Right, because the colours are flat. I didn't describe the colours. Nowadays, you would expect the colourist to put some shaping into those colours, on the faces, on the materials and the backgrounds. But here we have some flames which are just a field of yellow. His skin is just a field of pink. His shield, his shirt is just a field of darker pink. Deliberately chosen colour palette, though, in these muted knockback colours. We have no garish reds, no garish yellows, no garish greens and blues. Very interestingly done, because he was a different sort of designer first, wasn't he, Howard Chaykin?
Yeah, he did everything. He did. He was a formal designer, and then he started working for Gil Kane as an understudy, really. Understudy under Neil Adams as well. Worked for a few studios in his time. I hadn't realised this before he got into his own stride.
I first encountered Howard Chaykin when he did a one-off story in a Marvel comic about how Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., didn't age. It was to do with a super serum that Nick Fury took, and therefore that explained how Nick Fury had been in World War II and was still apparently about the same age in the 1970s. Subsequently, they've decided he can also be Samuel L. Jackson. But back in those days, that was where I'd first seen Howard Chaykin's artwork, and it was very un-Marvel Comics-like.
Well, the reason I wanted to bring this, and it's something I've asked you previously, Kev, how do you pick a panel out of everything? Funnily enough, even though I picked a very artsy piece here, I'm very much a words guy. I can't draw. I've never been able to draw. I've never had the patience. But I love the interaction of words and pictures. And what I love about this panel is this, to me, does something that no other medium does. There is such a lot going on in that 1/2 frame, and I cheat such a little. If you just, I might just dissect it a bit from the start. The go gang now thing running along the top, That's a continuation of what's been going on in previous pages. So there'd be a little, you're right, ticker tape style announcement saying, go gang 37, go gang 25, counting down to the go gang.
Aha.
So that happens. So this is the announcement of the go gang arriving. The go gang kind of Hell's Angels that run rampage through the Plex, which is this half shopping centre, half living arena that Flag is a policeman for. Then there's the explanation captions going on. It's Saturday night, and then the bit about Go Gang's anarchist terrorists, so explaining what the Go Gangs are. And then you get into the picture of Flag himself, the hero picture up front, with his cohort next door, and I forgot Mandy, her name. You both commented on the sound effect.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't think I could do the full page, but the sound effect is a gag.
Ah.
Because what those things do when they land is they make a noise that goes, mow, mow. So they go, papa, ooh, mow, mow. That's what, that's what the guns do. And do you know, Noreen, till you said, I didn't thought just how gunny a picture it is. It's completely gunny. I mean, the only thing about, my only slight defense in this is that I know that Flag's guns, they send what they call snowballs full of somnambutol, which actually puts people to sleep. So it's to stop them doing what they do. And it turns out the Go Gangs have been influenced by a subliminal signal that's making them violent, and then they drive through the shopping center on a Saturday night. So that's what it's all about. But The levels going on in that, it would be too busy for a film. It's actually what makes it work to me is that you can take that apart as a reader and read it at your own pace. You can see all these things going on. And that's what I absolutely love about it. That's why I thought, what sums up that absolute combination of words and pictures that only a comic can do.
Yeah.
It's further than a storyboard. It's further than a movie. You've got graphic design in there. As you said, Kev, you've got those fantastic illustrations. They're not his best words. I mean, he's not, to me, the best dialogue writer, but... And you can understand why he went to TV in the end. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you've got to have a big brain to comprehend a lot of the stuff that's going on in Chaykin's stuff.
That's very true. When we were looking at Bewitched earlier, it stuck to very clear rules. You would have to keep everything within those square frames or rectangular frames, and you've got to be able to clearly see what happens from one picture to the other. It's not so much insulting to the intelligence as helping people to read it. And what Howard Chaykin is doing with this American Flag page is he's challenging the reader, isn't he? He's like an art house filmmaker who's saying, telling a story is all well and good, and I think I can do that, but now I'm going to try and make you work.
It reminds me of The West Wing. I love The West Wing. I love Aaron Sorkin as a writer. Sorkin introduces you to people having a conversation about something you've got not a clue what they're talking about. And he does it. Trial of Chicago 7 does the same thing. You come in halfway through things and you build the picture as you learn. Chaykin is doing it throughout. He does it through all his work. He's got a recent book. Have you seen Hey Kids Comics?
No.
Hey Kids Comics is his Mad Men of the 50s and 60s, Marvel and DC, world of the creators. But it's told in this really complex style with flash forwards and flashbacks. It's beautiful. It looks great. You have to take your time to read it.
Look at his faces. You would cast John Hamm as American Flag, wouldn't you, Noreen?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. I was going to say, it's amazing, even as you were speaking, because as the time's gone on, I've started noticing more and more things. Like you were saying, it makes you work, and the layers of it. I've only just noticed that there's a woman in the back. Mm-hmm. I didn't even see her until now.
Oh, Mandy, she's all over it. I mean, he draws, Howard Chaykin draws incredibly sexy people of both sexes, always has. I mean, that's very much his thing.
Yeah.
And everybody looks stunning throughout this. But I mean, it's funny, the thing is, he's very body positive as well. You'll get people different sizes, different weights, races, colours, creeds, etc. He doesn't really comment on it, which is another great thing. This is, I think, set around 2031, which was 50 years in the future when he was writing it and designing it. And it's got that whole integrated world. I really like it. I mean, to me, it was where he peaked. Sorry, the one thing I also wanted to point out was that, again, there's another gag where they say, wave one's over. Remember, folks, rubber bullets, they are taxpayers. You know, these are Hell's Angels shooting through complex. Rubber bullets, because they pay taxes. You know, they're paying a salary. You've got to be reasonable here. It would really suit a TV series, American Flag, especially with the budgets that we've got now, because it was beyond the budget you could do in film or TV back then. It wasn't quite so Blade Runner. It wasn't quite so Max Headroom. It wasn't dour. And it's all, again, strangely corrupt and strangely positive, which I think, funnily enough, might be an American view of a dystopian society. It's going to work out in a strange sort of way.
Yeah, it does suffer from the fact that when you describe the plot, it's Paul Blart Mall Cop.
Was it? Okay, there's another wonderful thing here. Flag was, he's a new cop. I mean, it's the whole story is about him taking over as the marshal of this plex. His previous job was as a porn star, Mark Thrust. Who is? And Mark Thrust, his TV role is taken by his CGI replacement. And that was 40 years ago they were doing that joke.
We have been looking at artwork from Bewitched, the Dell comic from the 1960s based on the TV series by Screen Gems. And we have been looking at Howard Chaykin's American Flag. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Noreen. A listener at home, if you want to ask us any questions or find out more about my wonderful, wonderful guest, you'll find us on the social media. Noreen, where do we find you?
I'm on Instagram and all of the things at Noreen Skinner.
And Steve, where will we find you?
Sadly, I am Steve Sales Noble, also known as Shameful Steve.
Shameful Steve from the Talking Pictures TV podcast. In case you wondered whether there was some criminal part of his history that we were erasing. I'm on Twitter at Kev F. Comic Artist and at the website kevfcomicartist.com. You've been listening to Comic Cuts. Why not subscribe to be sure of hearing every episode when it comes out and leave us a review? Why don't you? It always helps. Thanks again to Steve Noble and to Noreen Skinner and to you at home for listening. I've been Kev F. And this has been Comic Cuts, the panel show.